couple of facts about the situation in the United States before World War I, which will make the Socialist Party position a little easier to understand. The first is the fact that previous to World War I, there were very few Negroes living either in the northern states or in the western states where the Socialist Party was essentially active. And the second factor was that in the north, where the working class, the industrial working class, mainly existed and was organized, there were large numbers of immigrant workers. In fact, the majority of the Socialist Party at the time, or at least for substantial periods, was composed of immigrant workers. And at this time, there was a large amount of national prejudice other than racist prejudice in this country, Irish versus Polish, etc. The general position of the old Socialist Party on the Negro question was basically as follows. That the position and role of the Negro worker within American society displayed nothing significant to distinguish it from that of the working class as a whole. Racism, like any form of national prejudice, was looked upon as purely a, quote, class question. Black and white, native and immigrant workers were all equally exploited by capitalism, and their mutual emancipation would occur simultaneously through a socialist revolution. Since racism was a product of capitalism, the destruction of capitalism would free not only the Negro worker, but all Negroes. Meanwhile, there were no basic democratic demands, immediate issues, or forms of organization which could or should form the basis for a struggle on the part of the Negro people as a whole. Indeed, by implication, any specifically Negro demands would be doubly suspect. One, they would involve attempting to reform the system, which was viewed as anti-socialist by a large segment of the party, including Deb. And two, specifically Negro demands would, quote, divide the working class and would appear to sanction the black worker shifting his solidarity from the white worker to middle-class Negroes and Negro businessmen. This position was false and destructive on at least two different counts. One, methodologically, in terms of what it displayed about the party's limited understanding of and ability to apply Marxism, and two, socially, in terms of the hostile and corrupting pressures it reflected. Methodologically, it represented a sterile, one-sided abstraction away from any consideration of the concrete economic, social, political, and cultural history of the American Negro, refusing to examine the complex interrelationship of national and class factors as they affected the Negro worker and farmer, ignoring their real position in American society, and refusing to recognize the demands and aspirations flowing from that position, the Socialist Party attempted to dissolve the question out of existence. Socially, the position represented an easy way of accepting the racist currents among its members, sympathizers, and milieu without admitting or recognizing what was occurring. These errors made it impossible for the party to consciously recognize and combat racism internally and externally, and in the process, they damaged the cause of the Negro people, that of the working class as a whole, and the development of the party itself. They made it impossible for the party to apply Marxism in a really fruitful manner to American life and to immerse itself in the struggles of the Negro people. They were one important example of the inability of the old Socialist Party to develop a transitional program combining the fight for concrete immediate issues with the basic goal of the socialist revolution in such a way that each struggle and development leads organically upward toward a higher stage in consciousness, organization, and development. The only basic resemblance that I can see between Cruz's position and that of the Socialist Party is that they both made a similar methodological error. While the Socialist Party took the class question in the abstract as being the only meaningful consideration, Cruz does a similar thing with the Colonial Revolution and the national question. The Socialist Party refused to examine the concrete reality of the Negro people and how this expressed itself in relation to the general class question and the Socialist Revolution. Cruz refuses to examine the concrete interrelationship of class, national, and racial factors either in the imperialist centers or in the colonial world. Both make the same basic mistake of substituting a one-sided abstraction from reality for reality itself. Other than that, the context and content of the two positions are, of course, quite different.
Is there anybody wants to ask John any questions about the position of the old Socialist Party? Is there any question of fact or any question of interpretation that anyone wants to raise? Well, if not, yes?
When you stop the similarity between The question is whether John would go into greater detail about the relation between Cruz's position and a position of the old Socialist Party. I think I'll relieve John of the necessity of doing that because we'll go into it at greater length either later today or in the next session. Ken?
Well,
repeat the question.
The question was, when was this conclusion or position formulated in relation to the Negro question and the old Socialist Party? And I think it's more a question of an approach and a position being evolved rather than one consciously and theoretically being arrived at. It was a position that was inherent in the general attitude taken by the Socialist Party or the majority of it, and it was something that was then explained after the fact for the most part in terms of, you know, this abstract class question. There was a time, I think, in 1903 where a program was passed with some specifically, as a specific plank that involved Negro demand and supported certain limited demands. And this was opposed by Debs, among others, as being something which was divisive because it involved one section of the working class and singled it out in a concrete way from the others. The Socialist Party was different as a party than as we conceive of a Marxist party. I mean, it included many tendencies, many different trends, and had no organizational or political discipline. And therefore, it's difficult to talk about a specific party policy. It's a question of the general orientation and what it did objectively.
I think it should be added that the tendencies inside the old Socialist Party were quite wide and varied on this question. Inside the party, there were some elements, the most reformist types in the party, who believe, as Cannon quotes it in this article that you have for your reading, who believe that the Negro was inferior. People who considered themselves socialists and who held that position during the first quarter, at least, of this century and even beyond it. Debs did not hold the view that Negroes were inferior. His mistake was in not understanding the need for a program to meet the conditions that Negroes lived in. He said it was not necessary, but he was not
in any way anti-Negro, and he did defend Negroes wherever they were attacked. Then there were a whole variety of positions in between combining these. But there never was within the old Socialist Party any significant tendency which understood what had to be done.
In your criticism of socialism, you criticize them for their position, but was it just because they made a mistake when they were applying Marxism, you know, was an error, or was it more because the class forces at that time, and particularly the Negro movement itself, wasn't at a level where they could
now? Yeah, the question was whether this was so much a factor of the Marxists within the Socialist Party misapplying Marxism, or whether the objective conditions were such and the Negro movement was such that their incorrect position almost flowed naturally from the situation. And my answer would be that it was a question of both. It's a question of them not fully understanding the Marxist method and taking it in a more or less one-sided way. And you see this in many other positions that they had, position on the trade union movement and on many other questions. And it was also a factor that the Negro movement at that time was not of a scope and a power that forced itself upon them and forced them to recognize reality and to change their position accordingly. And it was a combination of the two factors, you know, both working together, reinforcing each other. Them being able to have an incorrect position because they didn't understand Marxism fully, at the same time reality not hitting them over the head because there was no large mass Negro movement at the time which impinged upon them.
All right, the next report, brief one, will be by Derek on the Socialist Labor Party.
In order to understand the logic of the Socialist Labor Party position on the Negro struggle, you must observe that the fact that they considered Daniel De Leon their chief theoretician on this subject and other subjects. Since De Leon died before the Russian Revolution and was a member of the Socialist Party, one can expect his position on the Negro struggle to be that of indifference to the black man's racial oppression and placing great importance on his class oppression. He and a lot of other socialists at that time did not understand that the Negro was doubly exploited in capitalist society. They did not understand that the proletariat in the United States represented a contradiction because of the fact that it consisted of black and white workers. They only understood one aspect of this contradiction, which was the white workers. They could not divide the one, as Lenin says, they cannot divide the one into its contradictory parts and analyze each part. And out of this subjectivism and superficiality and one-sidedness, the position on the Negro struggle was produced by the SLP. They still hold this position today, and with few modifications. They maintain that all civil rights demonstrations, such as sit-ins and picketing, will get the Negro nowhere. And they maintain that black nationalism is the same as white racism. This and the fact that they deny don't look at the racial oppressions that Negroes suffer in the society can be seen in a quote from the article on the FNP, in which they say, but in America, where the population is mixed and where, moreover, Negroes have a host of supporters and allies among whites, all black political action is racist. In its brochure, continuation of the quote. In its brochure, the Freedom Now Party forcefully repudiates both Republicans and Democrats. This is plainly a step forward. The next step forward should have been to declare the American Negroes in the overwhelming majority are wage workers whose salvation, for good or ill, is bound up with that of the whole working class. As illustrated in John's talk, they expound on the fact that Negroes belong to the proletarian class, and they don't look at the other side of the oppression. And what they maintain is that in order for Negroes to achieve full equality in a society, and in order for anybody to get their equal rights in society, they must vote Socialist Labor Party. And this stems from the fact that they say that the Constitution says that an American revolution is legal, and therefore they think that you can change the system through legalistic ways, and they don't think that let's say when they get in power that there will be a civil war or rebellion by the capitalists as such, and this is the logic of their position. Are there any questions?
Sometimes you can learn a lot by reading the press of different parties, but you can also learn a lot by seeing what they actually do in their day-to-day work. And it's not just a question of having a theory about the Negro struggle, but what do they actually do when they're faced? What do the SLCers actually do when they're faced with the case of racial oppression? How do they react to the Negro's struggle for better life? And we had kind of a very sharp example of the way they react during one of our previous election campaigns. When a youth committee had kind of an afternoon tea party with different candidates, different socialist candidates, and the SWP candidates were invited, and the SLP candidates were invited. And to this afternoon meeting came a young Negro who at that time was very active in a defense group. One of these cases where a Negro had railroad in jail because the electrocutor hung. And the defense group had been organized to try and save him from death. So this Negro had a bunch of petitions. This is one thing that we do, is get thousands of petitions sent to the governor of Florida, I think it was. And he approached the different people at this meeting, socialists. He expected that everybody there would sign because they were all socialists, and everybody knows socialists for the Negro. and the SLP candidate refused to sign the petition. And the Negro was very shocked, and he couldn't understand why, and he started to explain the petition to him. The petition that Derek signed to you. And this is bound into a ferocious debate, I'll tell you, and between this young Negro and the SLP candidate. He wouldn't swallow their line at all. And here you had a real life confrontation of exactly what the political line means in terms of the day-to-day show.
Any other questions?
It seems that Cruz's method and the method of the Socialist Labor Party and Trevicius is very, very similar. Both of them, for instance, in relation to the Russian Revolution, take just about the same approach. The Socialist Labor Party says it was doomed to degenerate because it occurred in a backward country. Contradicting what Marx said, just the same way that Cruz says Marx said it had to come in an advanced country, and that because it came in a backward country, it was doomed to degenerate. Both of them appear to seem to have the same type of dogmatic approach towards Marx.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Yes, I think that the SLP position is a variant of the old Socialist Party position, the one-sided class approach. It's even starker than the old Socialist Party position, because the Socialist Party, even with their wrong present theories and policies, at least participates to some degree in the living Negro struggle. They attempt to connect themselves with people who are fighting against racial oppression. Of course, their aims are different than ours, but they are intelligent enough to understand that if you want to try to win recruits, you go to where the people are who are fighting. The Socialist Labor Party, in line with its general policy, refuses to have anything to do with Negro struggles, demonstrations, sit-ins, and so on, in the same way that it refuses to have anything to do with student demonstrations and protests or workers' picket lines and so on. In addition to their wrong, one-sided theoretical approach, they turn their backs on the Negro struggle as it develops. They stand off on the sideline, and as Derek said, they say, vote Socialist Labor Party. That's the only answer. Come down to our hall and we'll tell you what Marxism is. That's the only answer. Vote SLP. So they are pretty hopeless, and we won't devote any more time to them in these classes. The next report will be by Danny on the Communist Party.
The American Communist Party formed itself and drew its inspiration from the first socialist revolution in history. And one of the major lessons of the Russian Revolution was Lenin's teachings on the question of the role of the oppressed nationalities and of the colonies in relation to the struggle for socialism on a world scale. Lenin taught that the struggles of peoples, of nations, who had a historical continuity of being oppressed, of being bound together by ties of a common culture, of common oppression, were independently valid, that they shouldn't be subordinated at all times to the class struggle as a whole. He countered his attitude to what's been described as the attitude of the old Socialist Party, that the Negro struggle in the United States was just part of the overall class struggle, that nothing could be done about it before socialism, that no special demands should be advanced. Lenin said, no, this is incorrect. In the case of any struggle of an oppressed nationality, where demands come forward out of the very oppression of this nationality itself, socialists should support this, should enter into these struggles actively, should enter into struggles for improvements of oppressed nationalities within capitalism, and should point out the catalytic effect of the struggle of any oppressed nationality and moving the whole struggle for socialism forward, putting the general class struggle itself on a higher level. In this way, the American communists pioneered the attitude of Marxists in America today, looking upon the Negro struggle as the struggle of an oppressed people with their own history, their own conditions of life, formulating their own...